Hello, strangers. Hope you're having an excellent week. This is Unbound. My name is Jeff Costello. I'm a lawyer, writer, and short squeeze enthusiast.
I'm James Robertson, former Naval and Special Forces officer, failed politician, and person still waiting for Top Gun 2's release.
And together, we are fearlessly exploring the issues that matter. We hope you enjoy our show this week. All right, James, how's your week been?
Not bad. Things are getting a little bit more quiet now that Trump's gone.
It's so quiet. It's too quiet. It's too quiet. You can't trust anything.
It's too quiet, but you know, things are, can I say they're spicing up a little bit north of the border in Canada? So on the right here, you have the infighting and I don't know if we'd call it purge occurring within Aaron O'Toole's Conservative Party. They've gotten rid of Derek Sloan. A lot of people are pretty happy about it. I've seen some people, I think like Jen Gerson there, with her Substack, in line, talk about, keep going on. I think, is it Andrew Coyne? Andrew Coyne might've said, I think there's other people saying, yeah, you know what? If the Conservatives want to be more mainstream in Canada, and you and I have talked about this, it needs to shift a little bit more towards the center. And there's a number of people that said, with the federal Liberals going further to the left, there's a lot of room there in the center for a Conservative Party led by O'Toole if he wishes to take it there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, complicated thoughts a little bit. I think there's some merit to what Jen is saying, and I think that if the federal Conservatives want to really purge themselves of kind of bad things, how do I say this, purge themselves of people and individuals in the party who easily attract certain accusations, then I think that it's necessary. And I have no love lost for Derek Sloan, because I think that he's I was gonna say trash human being, but I held back. I don't think he represents what the party should be going for. And yeah, I don't think that the party wants people who hold some of his views to carry the party banner. I think it's kind of as similar as, you know, it's simple as that. And I think that this is kind of the core of the battle that is going to go on within the Conservatives, because there's a couple complicating things here. I think I've heard some people say that, okay, well, you purge Derek Sloan. Who do you purge next? Because you purge anybody who the NDP accuse of being a racist. Because if you do that, you might be purging people and not have anybody left come election time. And I think there's some merit to that argument. I don't know how seriously I would take it until I see it in action. But I think this is a case of the party needs to try to have a bright line when it comes to these issues and say, if you fall on one side of the line, you're out. If you fall on the other side of the line, which we have behavior which we think is appropriate, we'll back you 100%. So you got to pick where that line is and stand by your MPs who fall on the right side of it and get rid of the MPs who aren't. And if they don't like it, they can go form their own party.
Yeah, and that's, I think you, how you just ended it there, I think that is a very good point. And some people would quickly point out that, oh, like someone like Derek Sloan is getting canceled. I don't think that is the case at all. He can, you know, Aaron O'Toole is driving the bus and he's saying, this is where I'm going. And if you don't like it, you can get off the bus. This is where I think the party needs to go. And, he, you know, it's up for Mr. O'Toole, you know, come whenever an election occurs, if his strategy is right or wrong. But he was chosen as the leader of the Federal Conservative Party, and for he does have a say of where he wants to go in its preparation for taking on the federal Liberals. And, you know, Sloan isn't canceled. He can go join something like the People's Party of Canada if he so chooses. You know, but it just on things that he potentially believes or says, it doesn't seem to be in line where Mr. O'Toole wants to take it. And so such is the case. That's
what would you say are, because I think that this gets to a big conversation that you and I want to be having, which is, what does it mean to be a conservative or on the right in this time? Because I think that that's very different. And I think that the battle about individuals like Derek Sloan plays a part in that, because it may be that the time for, I guess I call it kind of a libertarian wing, like a, you know, a pro gun, a, you know, a slightly homophobic kind of like anti-government, essentially anti-establishment part of the Conservative Party may be in its death throes. I think that's probably a good thing. But what does that say about conservatism in general? I think that's my question, is if you had to pick two sides, the Derek Sloan side and the Conservative Party side, what is each one actually standing for in your perspective?
You know, I really honestly did not follow Derek Sloan that much. It just, whenever he did come up, it kind of came across as, I don't know the proper term, but I'll just say clickbaity. Like it just was like kind of going for those clicks. And I feel sometimes people that
you can't fund a campaign on liberal tears. Is that the problem?
Yeah, that BS. And you know, I get it. Like, party politics is tribal. There is that kind of trying to stick it to one another. And don't, you know, anyone that thinks that it's just the conservatives, I would very quickly point out you're wrong. All parties play into that. And that in some way is an innovation within the Westminster system and the fight for ideas, and, you know, has made this great country that we've had. But at the same time, there's this, this libertarian, I don't think it's even this libertarian, this contrarian aspect that I've experienced sometimes in the conservatives, which it's just exists for its own purpose. It's kind of like a self-licking ice cream cone. And I'm not sure it really provides a value to
our country. Not sure I really get the metaphor, but sure.
It's one of those pull toys back in the day, and it can just keep pulling its own cord and going. Yeah, and yeah. You know, like I just don't feel there's a seriousness to the ideas. And I know there's some people that would probably get upset with me saying that. And I don't want to have the quick labels or whatnot, because there is, you know, elements of people's faith and whatnot, based on the institutions that they hold sacred or not, that they can very quickly get, I get the term gaslit or whatnot, to say, oh, you're this ism or you're that. And I tend to believe that humans and human nature are far more complex than the labels and the polarizations that we like. But at the same time, I'd say that the conservatives, they're, I don't have a clear answer, because it's something I've been pondering myself. I think, you know, if you really want to get philosophical here, is like, what is it that we are attempting to conserve if we are to have that title? Or is it just some free enterprise type party? Well, then that's kind of a libertarian type thing. And I would like to think there's something a little bit more rich within a conservative element in Canada. And I'm not talking global, I'm talking in Canada. But that's the kind of, I'd say maybe some of the red Tory in me, that, you know, I love this country, and I think there's a lot of things, elements of institutions, ideas, and that are worth fighting for, and the preservation of this country and holding it together, which is a very difficult country to hold together. So, you know, and I think that's where Aaron O'Toole comes in. That's where the conservatives find themselves right now. And, you know, COVID doesn't help in bringing people together to fight over those ideas within a party structure. But those are the cards they've been dealt. And we'll see how they do going forward, with the federal liberals looking like that they're licking their chops, ready to go an election that, you know, they will likely see as a favorable.
I like the way that you put it about it being a sort of libertarianism that is just not serious. I think that's actually kind of a really, really good point to make, because I think that there is a strand of libertarianism that is very useful in politics and has a strong kind of philosophical backing. I don't think libertarians should run the government, or if they think one should exist. And I don't think that, you know, they're ever going to be, nor should they be, you know, a party that is super successful. But it is healthy to have a group of people who are skeptical about the state's power, who stand up for individual rights and stand up for that stuff. I think that's healthy. But I do totally take your point that there are a lot of people who carry that kind of banner a lot of times feel more like they're just waiting to be, they're really excited for somebody to come step on their rights so that they can snap back at them with like a thing about how, you know, I've been canceled, or I'm being, you know, being silenced by the government.
I just always felt that it was like, sometimes it's that libertarian contrarian that, you know, to kind of, to put it to a different story, it's that person, that friend that you have, that, you know, you're talking about music and you're really, you know, jazzed about like a certain music band or something that's rock band that's fairly popular, and they're always the ones that like, oh, that sucks. That sucks.
Oh, Debbie
Haven't
Downer?
You heard about these?
You talking about Debbie Downer?
Like, yeah, like, oh, those guys are suck. They're too mainstream, you know.
Well, and I think the thing is that they're taken to the extreme. They're unrealistic and they are not willing to compromise. Look, again, like there are productive strands of productive libertarians in the U.S. especially.
Mm-hmm.
They think about things like, how can we work together to create civil society and to create a world where we don't need to rely on the government as much? What would that look like? How can I structure businesses and the regulations we have to kind of advance that agenda? They're not sitting there, you know, being like, you better own a gun because we're all going to have to defend ourselves against our own government anytime.
Yeah. And
those
so,
two people hang out at the same conferences, but they're very different people. They're very different
people.
And so
what I think that brings, what that brings to politics, and I want to say that a gentleman that I always enjoy following, Eric Weinstein, talks about, and I really feel sometimes in the Americanization of Canadian politics, and this is both on the followers on the right, you know, that some of them like thought that, you know, things that Trump did had some magical key, to some of the AOC followers on the left, and they try to, you know, bring some of that stuff and the empty platitudes. I feel like it's LARPing.
Yeah, but I hate to say this, because I know you and I might disagree on this a bit, but Eric Weinstein is doing the same thing. Yeah. Like, he's a very smart and well-spoken person. But this guy is not a political genius. Like, this is the guy who tried to run a third party, like, campaign where each side would somehow elect, like, their own side to participate in an equally shared slate against the Republicans and the Democrats.
And then got
pissed off about being canceled because people told him his idea was dumb. Like, this isn't top
Ross
tier.
He Ross himself.
I'm not saying I haven't heard ideas from him that I like, but I'm skeptical of how grounded he is in his political discussions. I put it that way.
Yeah. I do sense that there is, in terms of sensing, I sense that some of his stuff is on, and his one point about LARPing, live action role playing, I do agree with. And I think someone like Derek Sloan was LARPing. Like, it's like, oh, this is this certain form and whatnot, you know, kind of against liberal tiers, sticking to the libs from the US. I'm going to take it here. I'm going to play this part. Not
100%.
And again, it's not real. It's not serious. There's nothing of deep intellectual weight or anything behind it. And it's just, this is the, you know, rolling the dice is the part I play. And
I think what people don't understand about politics either, I mean, not that I claim to really have a good idea of what's happening in politics, But there's a lot of money to be had in being a darling of certain intellectual streams of thought.
Big time.
Like, was it Josh Hawley? Like the Trump kind of the congressman or congressman who, you know, gave the, you know, said go get him at the Capitol Hill riots and kind of is now being shamed. But like he basically had, he would, people like him can build entire careers because they are the right age, the right skin color, mm-hmm. in his case white, and mm-hmm. And are saying the right things to the audience. Like, mm-hmm. there that exists on the right and the left. What is it called? Bread tube on the left? Like all these super lefty, like crazy, you know, tankies who wanna this is the well, you know, China not really a communist country, not communist enough is really the problem there.
I can't like keep up.
they are LARPing in their own way to their viewers, and the ability to monetize clicks makes that really, really easy for lots of people to do. That's what we're doing right now. We are essentially grifting to the people who want to listen to us try to intellectually work out these issues from a rational perspective. So we are grifters now as well. You're welcome.
Boom.
You're welcome.
Well played, sir.
I'm a grifter every time I go to my job, 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm grifting until about 6 o'clock.
Grifting.
5 days a week.
That's, you know? That's like the new term, right? It's like everything. Grifting's being tossed around a lot now. So, and sorry,
yeah, but
if there's any
there are people like
the,
what is it?
My
I have to say, like the Trump coalition, like the people who ended up supporting him at the end. It's like a bad comedy movie. Like the MyPillow guy. Like how is that not grifting? It's like he's like paying for these campaign stops, and it's every third ad on the big screens is just like a MyPillow ad for his shitty like made in America like pillow company. Anyway, I think again, all I'm trying to say is there are avenues to success that people can find their way into, and LARPing and virtue signaling to the right audience is a way to actually find monetary and professional success. Even if that success is temporary, it feels great for the people who are in it. I wish to have their good fortune.
So what's it going to be for attracting that new suburban voter, you know, in their 40s, family, you know, what's it going to be for the conservatives to get them? What's it going to take?
So I had this thought today, actually. So I was listening to Realignment, and Michael Lind was on, who I think you were talking about his article from Tablet.
Yeah,
and he was
really
talking about
stuff.
Populism versus pluralism, and mm-hmm. how populists are really attractive, but they don't have the staying power. And pluralists probably have the answer to being able to produce institutions and civil society that can be sustained and provide long-term value and reliability. Mm-hmm. And kind of my thought coming out of that is what we really need is to some extent is a populist who pushes pluralism on us, right? We need individuals and an individual who people can really hold up and celebrate and kind of look up to as the leader of a movement and the sole leader of a movement. But that movement has to be pluralist in nature. And I think that actually ties into what, you know, we want an individual who says, I have the way, you know, forward, follow me, I'll get all this, except what they're leading us towards is a society that is more democratic, more accepting and embracing of the differences between different people and trying to find ways to bring us together. And so they're using that populist energy in a direction that actually helps move the country to create better institutions.
Okay.
So that's my nickel of thoughts on that.
Nickel of thoughts? Yeah, I like it. Have
At least
we seen anything?
5 pennies worth in there. Have we seen anybody who's like that?
Or have we seen anything like that coming across? I mean, I initially thought I was starting to see some of that with some of Aaron O'Toole's messages and videos, which I thought were very well done, and I was quite enjoying what perceived to be the direction he was taking. Things have gotten a little quiet now, you know, with Sloan gone, maybe it will change. And of course, that, you know, I say, like, I like this, but that was because I was paying attention. I don't think most Canadians were paying attention at all.
And I don't think Aaron O'Toole is a populist. I don't think that he, and
oh,
he hasn't,
no, of course not.
He's not pitched himself like that. He doesn't, you know, profess to be a self-made man who has all the answers. And that's not a good or a bad thing. I mean, I think, you know, Justin Trudeau is much more of a populist than Aaron O'Toole, because he really centers the party on the PMO and what he thinks is the right thing to do. And that's kind of the de facto thing that populists do. And I think, to be clear, because Trump was a populist, now populist has a bad name to it. And everybody says, oh, if you're a populist leader, you must be bad. It's neither good or bad. It's a fact of how the party and society orients itself towards them, right? Are you leader of coalitions, or are you a dictator of your own party? And how that party is moving? Are you the sole person with the vision to lead the party into the future? Or are you kind of somebody who's brokering deals between people to make collaborations happen? And it's interesting, on the same realignment podcast, which was great, you know, Michael Lynn talked about how, like, the most influential people in U.S. politics weren't populists. They were lifetime politicians who had the ability to negotiate and mediate and wait for the right time, and kind of didn't have to kind of play to a base all the time. They could compromise when they needed to get things done and to advance their agenda. And Abraham Lincoln is probably, I think, the classic example of this. And his book, not his book, the book about Team of Rivals, Doris Goodwin Kearns, is like a classic about how he was able to earn everybody's respect, not always in a good way, but earn people's respect, and then bring people to the table who hated each other and say, we got to find common ground here. So let's get to it. And that's not what Donald Trump and that is. So again, what I think we need is, unfortunately, people like that have a tough time in elections because they're seen now as establishment lifetime politicians, like the Clinton Democrats, right? So you don't trust the Clinton Democrats because they've been there forever and they're lifetime politicians. And as people and voters, we kind of are repulsed by this idea that these people are just living off our dime for years and years and aren't getting anything done and blah, blah, blah. And they're right, except that there are skills that sometimes those people have, if they can be motivated by either love of their country or love of the greater good or pursuing some vision, they have some skills that they can actually use to make those changes happen if they choose to do it.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think what you're talking about is definitely, there is a depth of character. And I'm trying to think if it was Matt Gurney that was talking about it. As much as the right get upset about that lack of depth to Trudeau, they sometimes lose the fact that he's quite popular, and it's a lot just based on that beautiful image that he portrays. And he's like, yeah, people just want that nice image. What makes me think about that, and I feel I don't want to say like there's a superficiality to it. Maybe it's the Instagramming of politics, and I feel that sometimes that's the attraction, especially to younger people, about social justice, pretty far left causes, which, you know, that, like, they definitely can have a very pleasing utopian aesthetic to them. We talk about here you and I are talking a lot about O'Toole and Trudeau in this election. I don't take Jagmeet very serious, because I feel a lot of times he's not much different in Trudeau in terms of image, BS, and when certain seriousness is posed to him, he definitely seems to waffle. you know, but he does play to that kind of AOC platitudes and whatnot, which is pretty attractive. And is this younger demographic going to vote? They, you know, people always dismiss, they always dismiss the younger demographic, always say the old, but I feel we're in this time right now where a lot of older people are trying to be with the kids. And so will this next election, will Jagmeet do better? Will he do better? Will
no.
is you don't think so?
No, he's been totally outplayed by the Liberals. The Liberals have the look, this is a Liberal, this is a federal Liberal Party that hasn't released a budget in 2.5 years. They have no restraint over the spending. And they're very clear that, like, they'll just buy whatever projects they think they need to buy in the moment to continue to kind of win a plurality of votes and seats in the country. That's just clearly where they're at. And if you're a party on the farther left that is looking to create large programs in, whether that's dental care, pharmacare, national child care, how do you compete with that? You're basically selling the same thing, except they have the established brand. They have the capacity to actually win the election, and they have the Ben Woodfin didn't talks about this, but why the Liberals are the natural governing party of the country. And it's because they are the ones who are we feel in our kind of guts are naturally associated with things like multiculturalism and the healthcare system and all this stuff. And so there is this real kind of instinctive urge to vote for them, I think, when there's a toss-up. You've got to be motivated to vote Conservative. I think you've got to be motivated to vote NDP. If you're just like, I don't know, he's got nice socks and he says the right things and, you know, he...
he's dreamy. He's dreamy.
Plays nice and... And I think maybe it's just all the people in our in the kind of world who follow politics and are on Twitter and are kind of like watching it, who see, you know, an announcement saying that we're going to get, you know, we're going to be slashed on how much vaccine we're getting. And the next tweet out of the prime minister's, you know, office is a Bernie meme. Like, this is the level of responsibility coming out of the prime minister's office. It's like, so it's like, what can I do, guys? What you gonna do? You know, you know, it's also a sign to some extent from a leader who's really confident in re-election, as I think, as it stands, he probably should be. Now, the vaccines are an issue, and I mean, I don't think we have time to get into that today. It's becoming clear that this is a fuck up, and somebody's gonna have to take the fall for this. And I mean, the bus is full.
Will be another woman, like, within the cabinet. It seems to be Trudeau loves to, like,
who else
hunt women.
Will fit
so
under the Liberal bus, it's pretty packed down there.
Which woman is it gonna be? I know it sounds bad, but it's like, oh, which woman's gonna get the toss now?
Which very intelligent, highly accomplished woman is gonna get chucked out and blamed for this one? So,
well,
I mean,
can it be Freeland? I mean, like, the whole government rests on her shoulders. I think things would crumble.
No,
if
it can't
was
be
her.
Freeland because the plan. This is me being sarcastic. Nobody can see my face.
I know.
But the plan. The plan is to invoke the Emergency Measures Act, take over the power of the provinces, and then he's going to distribute Freeland out to be premier of all the provinces as well while they distribute this vaccine. So, you know, I don't think he can get rid of her. She's literally the only person holding that ship together.
Get off the Conservative conspiracy pages,
is she three
sir.
Ministers now?
Oh, I don't know. Man, oh man, I look at her and I was just like,
it's pretty
is
amazing.
Her shoulders getting bigger? Oh yeah, definitely amazing. And whether I you know, some people don't agree with their politics, sometimes I might
not
necessarily.
Politics. It's all Justin's politics.
But where I was going with is she is someone that I think a lot of young women wanting to get into politics should aspire to.
They should. She's an absolute, like, rock star. All the credit to her.
Yeah. So it's, I think that I'm glad that we have people like that within the House of Commons in Ottawa, taking
we
our
need
government
more.
Serious.
We need more.
That doesn't get her off the hook about budgets and some of, you know, the things that she does, and being a
Liberal,
I guess.
I don't
know.
She's not, that's not her choice. Like, that's what I mean when they say, when I say like they're not her policies. The big things aren't, you know, the desire, the choice to not release a budget. That's not, that's a PMO decision. That's not a Chrystia Freeland decision. The decision on, you know, procuring vaccines, maybe it's her decisions, but that's the kind of decision that would have ended up on the PMO's desk. You know, it's tough. That's the thing, is that the more the more people he throws under the bus, the harder it is to blame the next one when something happens, right? It's like you're literally running out of people. That's
all kind of talking around the fact that the Prime Minister's office is a very, very powerful office. And that's, you know, that argument was made before with Harper. It was made before with Chrétien.
It's gotten progressively stronger, especially under Harper.
Yes.
And then Trudeau's just picked up where Harper left off and just ran with it further down the field.
Sure has. I think that there can be a strong argument behind that for sure.
Anyway, we're probably pressing time, so we'll have to take that one up another time. Hope you have a good week, James. Hope it doesn't get a little more exciting or anything on Twitter. Maybe they'll bring Trump back next week. Maybe they'll bring Trump back and we can all have something to talk about again.
Oh, I'm sure there'll always be some good stuff to talk about. Anyway, Jeff, really appreciate it. You take care.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to Unbound. If you enjoyed our conversation, the best way you can help us continue it is to give us a like and a 5-star review wherever you get podcasts. It'd go a long way to help us grow our user base and include more and more people in our conversation. See you next time.